You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Phillies Backstage. I'm Tom Burgoyne, joined by my buddy and pal. And you're looking like a Christmas elf today, John.
Why am I looking like a Christmas elf?
You got a Christmas elf who hasn't shaved in about 2 days. But no, I'm pumped. This is our last show of the year, and we got a great guest.
We do have a great guest. We've met him because the good news in Philadelphia is that all the teams have great relationships, Sixers, Flyers, Eagles, and obviously Phillies. And we have had our next guest, Doug Peterson, come down for many times, took batting practice, batting challenge, and then threw out the first pitch. So let's bring him right on. Doug, how you doing?
Hey, guys, doing well. Thank you so much for having me on. Those are some great memories right there. I remember those little hitting or batting little contest we had right there in the stadium. Those were a lot of fun.
Well, it was fun because we'd have like the guys come down. We'd have like Jordan Mulata. That's the first time I met the guy, and the guy's huge. You know, to seeing him with a baseball bat, and John Dorenbos, I was obviously a big part of it way back when. And you actually played baseball, right? I assume growing up.
I did. Yeah, I did. I did play baseball. High school. High school was about the limitations of my baseball career, because I chose football after that.
Well, I tell you what, so I've been with the Phillies, this is my 29th season, believe it or not, and Tom's actually been here longer, and I'm usually the one that brings celebrities down to throw out the first pitch, and I remember when you came down to throw out the first pitch, I gave you the advice that I give to everybody. I always say, look, you're on top of, you know, you're in front of the mound, you don't want to go into the ground. I always say, aim a little higher than you normally will, and don't try to throw a seed. You know, you just want to basically aim high. If you go too high, you get a ooh. You go too low, you get a boo. So you're looking at me, and you're just kind of nodding your head. Just so, you know, I think basically whatever I was saying was going in and out of your, you know, your head. And you get up there, and I'm not just saying this because you're our guest today. You had the best first pitch. You totally disregarded my advice, and you actually threw a seed, and it had a little sinking action, fastball right down to the right down the middle of the plate.
Well, I tell you what, that's the most nervous I've ever been doing anything like that, remotely like that. And of course, that's the first time I've ever done that situation. You know, throwing out that pitch and everything. And, you know, I had to throw. I think I threw about 6 or 7 innings in the bullpen underneath the stadium to get my arm to get my arm loose and ready to go. You know, went out there and just said, "Hey, let's just throw it at the mitt." And did that, and I think it was a strike, and everything was great after that.
So wait, you're saying you were more nervous there than in the Super Bowl? You're in the Super Bowl,
yeah? Because you know it's. I was really nervous because that's, you know, Super Bowl is football, right? And it's what we do. It's what I've done pretty much my whole life. And that was just kind of, human nature for me. Throwing out a first pitch, not so much, in front of about 40,000, 45,000 fans. That was pretty crazy.
Yeah, well, you're being very modest too, Doug, because I, doing some research, you know, knowing you were coming on today, were you an all-state baseball player? I mean, you had some success playing baseball in high school.
Yeah, I had some success, obviously, back in high school, and a lot of athletes do. I did play baseball. Baseball was a kind of the second love for me. You know, I pitched, played the outfield. You know, had a pretty decent, you know, high school career, and like I said, I chose football after that. But yeah, baseball was always a passion of mine as well.
Yeah. Well, you did pitch. Okay, so that makes sense because I remember when you threw out that first pitch. It's like, yeah, I think Doug's done this before. But like you said, just won the Super Bowl. Actually, it was right after Roy Halladay had passed, and I knew you came out and honored him by wearing his uniform.
Yeah, so, wore his uniform.
Yeah, real electric moment for us too. So do you ever get tired of talking about that Super Bowl season, Doug?
It never gets old, whether it's a highlight or an interview or just talking in general. You run into fans. I run into, you know, Eagles fans all over the place, all over the country. And, you know, they always remember what a great win. And, you know, thank you for a great victory. It was the best day of my life. All those stories. And that's just so special to me and my family that, you know, had the opportunity to bring that city a world championship and a Super Bowl, and something we'll always remember.
Yeah, I mean, do you ever, just for giggles, watch YouTube? John, I love watching, especially getting ready for, you know, knowing Doug was coming on, watching YouTube videos of fans on, when that last play gets dropped, you know,
right.
And the Eagles have won
every
the Super
Philadelphia
Bowl.
Fan had their yeah. you know, stomach just churning.
But I love watching the YouTube videos of fans recording themselves watching the games. Do you ever watch those, Doug? I mean, it just must give you such a thrill to see how the fans, you know, just reacted after that win.
Yeah, it's pretty special, you know, to know that you did something like that for the city and for the fans. And I have caught a few of those moments, you know, and the ones I like too are not only the ones, you know, the people in the stadium, but people all over the country or the world that were watching that game, and to see the reactions of the living rooms or the patios or wherever people were in the bars and restaurants to just celebrate and cheer and hug each other and go up and down and cry. And, you know, that's what it's all about. And those are the memories that I always, you know, take away from winning that game.
Well, and I guess I always think, too, a couple things. First of all, it was his first Super Bowl win, you know, for Philadelphia. But also, it was so, you know, he had such a great team. Just the city fell in love with that team. It reminded me of the 93 Phillies, you know, and or the 2001 Sixers without Iverson. Maybe a season that kind of came out of nowhere a little bit. And the whole idea that, you know, we kind of were the underdogs that year. And how much did the team kind of feed off that underdog, you know, mentality?
I tell you what, I think the city really embraced, you know, that underdog theme when our players, I remember it was Lane Johnson, I think, and Chris Long with the team at the time. And they came out after, I believe it was the NFC Championship game, I think, and they wore the dog mask. And, you know, I just think the city embraced that moment. It sort of resonated throughout the city, right? The underdog mentality and that whole season, that's how our players felt like we were the underdogs the whole season. And, you know, something that we can embrace, something that we could kind of play each week for. Quite honestly, they're playing for each other, they're playing for the city, you know, and the fans, and carried it over to the Super Bowl. And, you know, underdogs and the whole thing in the Super Bowl, and that to me is what's special about that team is how they really embraced each other, you know, because you got a lot of different personalities on a football team, but yet they came together, how they embraced one another, played for one another, and ended up ultimately winning a championship. But that was sort of a defining moment, I think, with those underdog masks that people could really relate to.
Well, and also,
this episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
So you personally, it must have resonated because of the quarterback situation. I mean, you personally, as far as a player, you know, you came in for Dan Marino, and then you'd come in for when, you know, Favre would go down. You go in for a lot of different quarterbacks. All of a sudden, you have Carson Wentz, who's obviously the superstar, having a great year. Then he gets hurt. Then everyone's hopes, you know, as a fans are looking, oh, my God, is our season done? We have, you know, Carson Wentz goes down. And then you have, you know, obviously everyone knows the story. Nick Foles comes in and, you know, does a tremendous job. So did that have special meaning to you as, you know, as someone who, you know, toiled all those years, you know, as a quarterback to see someone like Nick Foles come in and do that, do what he did?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I my whole career was a backup. And, you know, I think about that season, 2017, and, you know, we lost Jason Peters. We lost Chris Maragos. We lost Darren Sproles. Jordan Hicks. We lost these guys to season-ending injuries, and, you know, Carson Wentz, and, you know, the guy behind them just stepped up, and the guy behind them was prepared and ready to go, and that's the life of a backup, you know. And I think about Nick Foles, that was, you know, I never, obviously as a backup quarterback, never you know, won a championship or took a team to a championship. But, you know, that's just who and kind of, you know, what our team was that year. And I give a lot of credit to my coaching staff for preparing these guys to come in and preparing Nick Foles to come in and, you know, take over for an injured Carson Wentz, who was probably going to end up being the MVP that year. And, you know, and that's what resonates again, I think, thinking about what Nick did, you know, thinking about my career as a backup, thinking about all the backups that came in that year and ended up being starters for us. Just a special, special team. And quite honestly, that's what it takes to win championships. You got to have a special team of special players. And, you know, a lot of players that kind of gave of themselves to their teammates. That was something we talked about, you know, as a team. And it's just an amazing feeling, obviously, knowing that's you know, what we did and what we accomplished.
And leadership too, Doug. I mean, on that team, you had some great leaders. And I wonder too, as a coach, do you have to identify players on a team, or do they just kind of naturally rise to the top? And I ask that too. I always go back to the '93 Phillies again, where, you know, Jim Fregosi needed a guy in the clubhouse. And he identified Darren Dalton, who at that time hadn't had a lot of success, a lot of injuries. But, you know, he was growing as a player and certainly as a leader, it was always there. But he was never the vocal guy. And Fregosi did meet with, you know, Dalton before the season and ask him, hey, I really need you to kind of take my message to the team and be that guy in the clubhouse. Do you have to kind of identify a guy? And was there a guy that you did in 2017?
You know, I think that's part of the off season. You know, for me, is where you really begin to see kind of the structure of your football team and who really is going to, as a player, who's going to embrace, you know, the leadership role. Obviously, you think about the quarterback, right? He should be. And Carson was a tremendous leader on that team. And you think about, you know, a guy like Jason Peters, a veteran guy. You know, Malcolm Jenkins, a veteran guy. Chris Long, veteran players who had been on championship teams in their career. And yet that's where we started sort of, I think, cultivating the leadership and who was going to, you know, take charge, you know, that season. And that all started for me in the off season. Who are these players and how can I get them to lead the football team? And as the head coach, you got to lean on these guys from time to time. And, you know, then you get to the regular season and you continue to lean on them and you continue to allow them to grow and communicate and, you know, spread my message to the rest of the team. And those guys, even when Jason Peters was hurt and Carson Wentz was hurt, they were still leading. They were leading behind the scenes. They were leading off the field. And that's so important, you know, so important for a head coach to have players like that, you know, you can identify and ultimately call upon to lead your football team.
So then you obviously won a Super Bowl with the Packers in 1997. So as a coach, when you're up in Minneapolis, what did you take from that Super Bowl as a player to preparing your team best, you know, for you're obviously facing the Patriots, you got a little downtime. You know, there's a lot of ways a team can go as far as letting guys loose, you know, being very strict as far as, you know, what they're doing going out. How was your, again, philosophy shaped as a player back in 97?
Well, you know, again, I just think about the team itself. I think about the construction of the roster and the players. And, you know, Mike Holmgren was our head coach and how he led, you know, our football team and the messaging, the consistent messaging throughout the entire season. You know, and then we ultimately get to, you know, the Super Bowl. And it's ironic because I got to sit down with Mike Holmgren. He was doing the radio broadcast for Westwood One, and he wanted to do a sit-down interview. So I was able to sit down with a former head coach of mine and kind of pick his brain. And I think the number one thing he kept saying was just be consistent. You know, be consistent with your messaging. Be consistent with, you know, what got you to the championship game. Be who you are. Don't do anything differently. And that's just something that I think resonated with me as the head coach of the Eagles, you know, once we got you know, to that final week and up in Minneapolis, and, you know, really all the speeches were done by then, right? You're at the last game of the season, and right. You're kind of tired of doing all the speeches. But that to me resonated so much. Just do what got you there. And that was the biggest message that I took away from, you know, being there in that final week.
Well, you also brought in a guest speaker, right? He was one of the most famous Packers of all times.
Yeah. Brett came in and, you know, he told me earlier in the year, he says, "Hey, Doug," he said, "if you make the Super Bowl, I'll come speak to your team if you want." And I said, "Well, all right." You know, so I held him to it, and he came and spoke to our team, I believe on Saturday, and just kind of shared some words of wisdom with them. And somebody who had been there, right? Somebody who had been there and done that. Had a tremendous career, obviously, and he was gracious enough to come and talk to the guys.
Ah, awesome. And I have to, you know, John and I are sitting here. It's like, all right, who's going to ask Doug about Philly, mm-hmm. the Philly special? One of us has to ask.
Well, so. And I think, Doug, I went to University of Virginia, and I think somebody who was a former quarterback at University of Virginia had a little bit of a small part in that Philly, right? Mike Rowe, didn't Mike have a... I guess they might have brought up the idea. The Bears had done it, right?
Yeah, he was with the Chicago Bears when they ran the play. And, of course, Press Taylor, an assistant coach of mine, he actually did some research for me and found the play. And Frank Reich, I brought the play to Frank, and I said, "Hey, I want to put this play in for the NFC Championship game against the Vikings." And he was like, "Well, what are we going to call the play?" And I just said, "Hey, how about Philly Special?" And so it took a life of its own. You know, the Philly Special became what it is today. And obviously it's not the first time that play has ever been run and executed. But at the same time, you know, 4th-and-1 in the Super Bowl, everybody's, you know, thinking, what the heck is going on? And anyway, you know, it came off, and I give a lot of credit to my staff that year for finding the play, and then, of course, the players for executing that play, and gosh, it worked. I'm just so glad it worked.
But was that play designed for, like, from the 1 yard line? Wasn't that play more of, like, I don't know, like 8 or within the 10 or closer, not as close to the goal line? Or am I wrong?
Well, what's interesting is I never had that play as a 4th-down play at all. I had it more as a, you know, a short yardage, a 3rd-and-1 or maybe a play that could have been even out in the field. You know, I never once thought to use it on a 4th-down inside the 5 or inside the 1 yard line. But, you know, it's just sometimes those plays, when Nick Foles came to the sideline, sometimes those plays just come to mind. And that was just the perfect time when he suggested that. And it got my brain thinking. And I said, yeah, let's go. And you know, it obviously caught New England, you know, by surprise. And it was executed by us, you know, for the touchdown.
Yeah, and I wonder, you know, you're always you had the reputation of being aggressive, and going into that game, you're facing the New England. Obviously, you knew, you know, we were going to have to score a lot of points. You know, I guess, did you have in the back of your head, like, hey, in this game, you know, if we have the opportunity for a trick play or two, were you thinking that way?
I was, you know, and a lot of my mentality, a lot of my thinking and process is just how I was going to call that game. Two, you know, I knew we were going to have to be aggressive everywhere on the field. You know, we're playing a great football team. You know, Tom Brady's a quarterback, Bill Belichick. They've been there. They've done it. And I just knew that we were going to have to be as aggressive, and we were going to have to maybe pull out a trick play or two from time to time and maybe go for it on 4th-down a couple times and, you know, stay as aggressive as we could. And that's what we did. And that was, you know, the 2 weeks leading up to the Super Bowl. That was kind of my message to the football team, is we got to keep the hammer down, put on the gas. You know, we can't let up. Even if you get the lead, you can't let up. If you're behind, you can't let up, you know, and the guys did it, and they finished. You know, we talk about finishing all the time in sports, and they finished that game, and best game ever.
Nice. Well,
did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending with real-time notifications. Kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
And just for the record, Doug, just for the record, I got to tell you, my brother's house in Bluebell, the whole Burgoyne family is there. And I don't know who in my family did take a cell phone video of the Philly special. So we're all around the TV. There are like 40 of us in the house, and we have a video of our reaction to that play.
That's great.
We didn't post it on YouTube, but you know, every once in a while I whip out that video and just like, oh my gosh, we went nuts.
That's great. Hey Doug, also, you know, I guess it had to have been your thinking. If I remember correctly, the Jaguars were in the AFC Championship. They had the lead, and at halftime, I think they or before right before halftime, if I'm remembering all this correctly, I think they had the ball with like 40 seconds left on their own, maybe 40, and they decided to take a knee. And that you must have looked at that and said, you know, you got to be aggressive right there, right? You're playing the Patriots, as you just said earlier.
Yeah, you know, I saw the that game from my office, and just watching that whole sequence unfold. And. And, you know, obviously, you know, the Jaguars had a significant lead going into the locker room. But I just, at that point, when I saw what happened, I just kind of vowed to my own team, like, you know, I'm going to put the ball in my players' hands, let them go out and execute, be as aggressive as I can. You know, and so that kind of resonated with me when that happened. And I saw that, and it sort of clicked in my brain, like, oh, this is exactly what I need to kind of communicate to my team, that we need to finish. We need to play every down. And you know, I never said that to anybody, you know, before. I just kept it to myself and just went out and said, hey, let's stay aggressive. And the guys played extremely well in that championship game, which was against the Vikings.
Nice. And well, and we have to ask you too, Doug, about the parade. John and I are fortunate enough that we were both part of the 2008 Phillies parade. And, you know, that day must have just blown your mind to see all those fans out there.
It was crazy. It was crazy from the second we left, you know, Lincoln Financial Field and right across the street there from Citizens Bank. And, you know, we made the right turn on Broad Street and straight down. And it was unbelievable, the amount of people and the magnitude and the depth of people got bigger and bigger, and the crowds got bigger all the way to the, you know, the Philadelphia Art Museum, and just a great way to, you know, end a championship season with a parade like that for the city, for the fans. You know, I had friends and from New Jersey that you know got rooms, hotel rooms downtown, just so they could be a part of the, you know, the festivities the next day, and just a great of people, and to stand on those, you know, art museum steps, you know, to see the crowd, just for me, just a very proud moment.
And did you have any idea Jason Kelce would show up in a mummer's outfit?
Had no idea. Had no idea. And I thought it was fitting for him to do that. And but yeah, I had no idea.
Doug, Tom and I were on the floats in 2008 for the parade. And it was funny because I told our players, I said, look, you guys aren't going to believe what you're about to witness. And even I was blown away and I went to a lot of the parades in 1980 for the Phillies, 83 Sixers, right? 83. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's right.
But the funny thing is right when we started pulling up Spring Garden, we came up Spring Garden from Delaware Avenue. We literally started getting accosted by fans that were hoisting up bottles of vodka, bottles of beer, cases of beer, bottles of wine, and people were waving out windows, and grandmothers are crying. I said to somebody, I said, oh my God, it looks like we liberated France, right?
Well, hey, there's a YouTube of Doug. You made a great catch on a Bud Light, I think.
That's right.
Yeah, it's a great YouTube that circulated.
Yeah. that was a great catch. I had my wife was on the bus with me, and I saw, I was looking down, and I saw the guys, and they were, you know, obviously they were throwing beer cans and stuff, full beer cans, you know, up on the buses and stuff. And one was actually headed towards the direction of my wife, like the back of her head, and I just happened to reach out and snag it. Actually, was a pretty good catch. But yeah, that was a crazy day. You know, people throwing stuff, and you know, they're throwing footballs and different things for us to sign and throw them back, and just a special day.
That's great. A couple more memories about as you as a player, because there's two big moments. One, you were the quarterback for when Don Shula had his historic 325th win. Tell us about what that was like.
Yeah. Well, you know, and ironically, it was against the Philadelphia Eagles at the old Veterans Stadium, you know, in 1993. And, you know, I went in that day as the backup quarterback. You know, everybody thinks that Dan Marino was the starter, but he wasn't. Scott Mitchell, the backup, was actually the starter that day. Dan had tore his Achilles earlier in the season. And then Scott got knocked out with a little bit of a shoulder injury. And next thing you know, I'm in there. And kind of two things. One, we only threw the ball when I was in there six times, which is unheard of. And then secondly, we ended up coming back and kicking a couple field goals in the second half to win that game. And, you know, to do it in Philly, obviously for Don Shula, you know, it just was, again, another special moment, you know, in my career as a player, and something that I'll always, you know, always remember.
Yeah, and I hope you get to eat free steaks at the Shula Steakhouse if that's still
it's not open anymore.
It's not here in Philly anymore. No,
but it still has got to be open around the country, right?
I think there's probably a couple.
I think you should get free steaks there, Doug.
I that would be nice if I did, but I don't think I do anymore.
Well, I'm sure just like Charlie Manuel, you don't pay for anything when you come to Philadelphia. So, but one other moment which I remember, we all remember Thanksgiving Day. You actually were a holder for a long time for the Packers, and. But this was not with the Packers. This is with the Dolphins.
Dolphins field.
Yeah, and it was Pete Stoyanovich, right? He had his field goal blocked. Remember Leon Lett, Tom?
Oh, yeah.
Leon Lett tried to scoop it up.
Doug was in that game.
Yeah, he's the holder, right?
Yep. And, guys, that was actually the same year. That was in 1993. That was Thanksgiving Day in 93. So it was about 2 weeks after Don Shula's victory that we were in Dallas for the Thanksgiving Day when the Leon Lett play happened and we kicked the game winning field goal in a kind of an ice storm there in Dallas.
Hmm. How about that?
Were you involved in trying to get the ball once it got blocked, or were you out of the play at that point?
No. We were once it got blocked, it was headed towards
the other way,
our end zone. So we just stayed away from it and. He should have stayed away from it too, but fortunately he came in and he touched the ball and gave us a second chance to kick the field goal.
On Thanksgiving with only about a billion people watching, you know.
Yeah, back in 1993.
I think John might have warned you.
Doug, I didn't. So.
So I'll tell you. We always close out our interviews. John always prepares a special quiz. It's about your life. You should do fine.
Yeah, have an inside advantage.
I do have one last question for you, and that's my wife and I are binging Friday Night Lights, the TV show. I think there are five seasons, and we're really enjoying it. I'm watching this, and I knew we were talking to you today. Do you have sometimes Hollywood can kind of butcher, you know, games and sports movies, but do you have a favorite football movie and maybe a coach that, you know, you just love that movie?
You know, there are a couple of nice football kind of sports movies, and obviously the Friday Night Lights, that whole story. I love the true stories. And that was, you know, Odessa Permian, you know, kind of the West Texas town going against the big, you know, Dallas Carter team, you know, that year for the state championship. And I think Dallas Carter had, who knows, they had, gosh, 7, 8, 9, 10, you know, Division I, you know, athletes that year. And that kind of stuff. And then for them to overcome, you know, and win that football game, that's, I hate to, it kind of sounds cheesy, but it's kind of how our season was in Philadelphia. You know, you're kind of the underdogs, and you always felt like you were the underdogs, but yet you come back and you win the game. And to me, those types of movies really resonate with me, again, because of my career and just the way things kind of unfolded for me.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm loving it. John, did you see Friday Night Lights?
No, I didn't.
It's tremendous. Yeah. Now, it's been off the air for a while, but you can binge it, and I'm telling you, it's fantastic.
All right, Doug, it's time for...
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
Great.
It's time for the quiz.
Oh, boy.
It's eight questions. It's about your life, so you have an inside advantage. And what we tell our guests is that the bar set is you have if you get 6 out of 8, and we'll be lenient, but Tom, as I mentioned, is the best friend of the fanatic, right? So So you'll get something Fnatic related. I know you're
Fnatic or Swoop related.
Not Swoop related.
Doug loves Swoop.
He does. But this will be Fnatic related.
Yeah.
Whatever you want Fnatic wise, you got it. All right. So
all
you got, here we go. And it's multiple choice too. So here we go.
Oh,
question number one. You went to Ferndale High School in Ferndale, Washington, right? Which of these celebrities did not go to Ferndale High School? I'm gonna give you 4 celebrities. 3 went to that high school, 1 did not. All right. A is Michael Conan, who's a former punter for the Falcons and Buccaneers. B is Jake Locker, former quarterback for the Titans. C is Marshall Mathers, who is also known as Eminem. And D is Darren Norris, who's a voice actor for Fairly Odd Parents and some other shows. So is it Michael Conan, Jake Locker, Eminem, or Darren Norris?
It's Eminem. C.
Eminem is correct. Final answer is great. All right. You also went to Northeast Louisiana, which is now known as University of Louisiana at Monroe. Which of these celebrities did not go to that school? Okay. Former NFL quarterback Stan Humphries, Fred Rogers from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, country singer Tim McGraw, or former pitcher Chuck Finley?
Let's go with B, Mr. Rogers.
Mr. Rogers is correct. And, Doug, I got to tell you a quick story. So, speaking of Tim McGraw, so Tug, obviously, Tom and I both knew Tug, his dad, very well. So, Tom Burgoyne, before he was the best friend of the Fnatic, was doing music for the Phillies games, right?
So Tug
McGraw walks into the music room before the game and said, "Hey, Tom, my son is a aspiring country singer. Here's a cassette tape. Can you play his song?" And Tom said, "Sure, Tug, no problem." Tug leaves the room, and Tom's like, "Yeah, right, country singer." And God knows what he did with the tape.
I toss it into the box of music we never play.
So needless to say, Tom Burgoyne will never be a music program director.
I wasn't scouting music at the time. Little did I know, Doug.
There you go.
All right,
there you go.
You're 2 for 2. All right, you played in the World League of American Football for the New York New Jersey Knights in 1992. Which one of these guys was not a teammate? Okay, so you're gonna go back to way back when.
Wow.
All right, I tried to get some pretty big names here. Ready? Or at least production point of view. A is Monty Gilbreth. B is Cornell Burbaze. C is Philando Newton. And D is Juan Epstein. Sorry, I started
what?
Guessing.
What? What's the last one?
I started laughing. Juan Epstein.
It's got to be D.
Welcome Back Cotter.
Yes, Juan Epstein from Welcome Back Cotter started.
Welcome Back Cotter. Yeah, all I was right. going to say. And Epstein's not necessarily your typical football name.
Right. Epstein's mother is going to get him out of the football game. So, all right, you're 3 for 3.
Right.
Number 4, you're one of 4 individuals to win a Super Bowl as a player and a head coach. Which one is not one of these individuals? So 3 of these guys won a Super Bowl as a player and head coach, and 1 did not. So it's A is Bill Cowher, B is Tom Flores, C is Mike Ditka, and D is Tony Dungy.
A.
A is Bill correct. Cowher. 4 for 4, Tommy.
Cowher.
He's on a roll.
He is on a roll.
All right.
Keep it rolling.
I'm not sure if they get easier or harder, but here we go. 1995, you played for the Rhein Fire, which is located in Dusseldorf, Germany. He's got a very interesting career.
Right.
Which of these teams was not in the World League of American Football at that time? Okay. A, Scottish Claymores. B, the Milan Marauders. C, the Amsterdam Admirals. Or D, the Barcelona Dragons?
B.
Milan Marauders. He's on a roll. 5 for 5, Tom.
Crushing it.
All right, six. The Chicago Bears scored a touchdown on their version of Philly Philly. We mentioned this in 2016. Which of these players was not involved in that play? There's, again, three guys are involved in the play in the Bears.
I think Doug's going to get this, but go ahead, John.
Well, okay. I'm sure he'd. Okay, A is Matt Barkley. B is Jeremy Langford. C is Cameron Meredith. D is Jordan Howard.
Let's go D, Jordan Howard.
He's 6-for-6.
Hello.
All right.
All over that one.
All right, we had to throw a little baseball question in here. You played for the Eagles in 1999. Who led the Phillies in home runs that year with 31? Okay. Was it Scott Rolen, Ron Gant, Rico Bronya, or Mike Lieberthal? Tom doesn't know these questions, so you can ask for a lifeline if you want to Tom Burgoyne, who was working here at the time.
All right, I'm gonna 99. I've slept since then. So Tom, I'm gonna throw a lifeline to you. Man,
so it's Scott Rolen, Ron Gant, Rico Bronya, or Mike Lieberthal.
I'll give you a suggestion, but
you give the answer.
Oh, jeez. And I could crush his 6-for-6 right
could.
Now?
Yes, you could. No. All in you.
All right, I got to go Rolen, Scott Rolen.
You're wrong. It's Mike Lieberthal.
Oh,
see?
Jeez.
So
you trusted him, Doug. Yeah. You messed up.
You messed up. You trusted me.
All right, last question. You still won. You already qualified, and you're going to win anything you want Fanatic-related. So the last question, and thank you for doing this, is we'll go back to Tim McGraw because you are a Tim McGraw fan, correct?
Yes, I am.
All right. Which one of these songs is not his song? So three are real Tim McGraw songs. One is not. Okay?
Okay.
A is Live Like You Were Dying. B is Humble and Kind. C is You Take the Medicine, I'll Take the Nurse. And D is Southern Girl.
C.
That
one sounds
kind of
out there.
Is that like Ted Nugent or something?
That was a real country song, believe it or not.
That is a real country
song. That was a real country song, yes.
That was a real country song?
I looked it up, yes. Someone made money off that one. So there you go.
But not Tim.
No, not Tim McGraw. He's too nice of a guy to do
all
that.
All right.
Well, Doug, you did it. Yeah. 7 of 8. Congratulations. And
Thank you. Listen,
we want to thank you for coming on, Doug. We're fired up. John and I are lifelong Eagle fans, and we really appreciate you coming on with us.
And you have lifelong – if you ever want to come to a Phillies game, obviously Tom and I will take care of you and your family.
Well, I appreciate that. It means a lot. And what a great city to not only coach in but to play in as well. And it's a great city when you win. And you know, you get to meet some great people, you know, like yourselves, and just a lot of great memories, you know, for my career there. And hopefully, hopefully I'll get a chance to coach on a sideline, but it'll probably be opposite of, you know, the head side there in Philadelphia, or the home side there in Philly. But great place to play, and I appreciate you guys having me on today.
Awesome. Well, either way, Doug, we'll be pulling for you. So best of luck. All right.
Thanks, Doug.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right. Bye-bye.
See ya.
How about that, huh, John?
That was
great. We
are
on a roll.
And a super nice guy. I mean, he is what you read. If you know, obviously, most of our listeners haven't met him. Super guy, down to earth. And again, he threw a seed on that first pitch. So, one of the questions we should have asked him is that, you know, we always say catchers make the best managers. Well, I'm assuming backup quarterbacks probably make the best coaches in the NFL because – you know, they're involved in the plays. They're seeing it from the sidelines. You know, they have a front row seat. You know, and they're actually involved in the scheming of the plays. So it's but he's again just like Charlie Manuel's going to go down. Should never have to buy a drink or meal in Philadelphia.
Absolutely not. And just it was so much fun just preparing for this interview, John, because, you know, I watched the highlight NFL highlight film. I watched, a bunch of stuff. There's really great stuff online that you
can
watch.
And I went to the Ambler Library and read his book. I thought I was going to check it out. And next thing you know, I got engrossed into the book. And next thing you know, an hour and a half later,
Well, a couple things about his career, too. It's unbelievable how many times that Miami cut him.
Five times.
Like, he was on. And so talk about perseverance, you know. And it was just cool. The other thing that really stood out to me in kind of going back and looking at things was his speech to the team after they won the Super Bowl. So they came off the field after the trophy presentation. And you saw how close-knit they were.
Yep.
I mean, and he mentioned Malcolm Jenkins. You know, Malcolm went in there. And, you know, Doug, of course, his speech was great. But then, you know, Malcolm just, you know, first of all, love was their word, you know, the NFL highlight film featured that, like, you know, how much they love and respected one another. And it's just like, it, you know, as a coach, he just has to be so proud. Like when he looks at this stuff, like, wow, this is what being a head coach is all about. Even if they had lost that game, you know, just that bond that team had, and they were an underdog, you know, it just awesome.
And, you know, there are rumors now that he is, you know, could be a good replacement for, you know, out in Jacksonville.
Yeah, for sure.
And
perfect.
Well, it really is perfect because, you know, here you got it. You know, they just had a controversy, obviously, with their current coach.
Yep.
And
quarterback Trevor Lawrence.
And there's a young quarterback, and here's someone that's, you know, was a backup quarterback, was known as someone to, you know, to groom, you know, whether it's Carson Wentz or Nick Foles or whomever. So, I think it would be an ideal choice, and I think, you know, it could be interesting. We might have gotten him at the right time. Because you know what?
I think his phone's going to be blown
off. His phone might be blowing up, and I don't think he's going to be taking a call from Tom Burgoyne and John Brazier.
Low on the pecking order.
Right.
John, hey, we finished the
2000. That was a fun year.
That was a great year. Happy holidays to you.
And you too.
It was a lot of fun. And, hopefully better days and good days ahead in 2022.
And looking forward to our next interview. We'll go back to the Phillies end.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. Well, and we also want to thank everybody who tunes in to Phillies Backstage. Really, we love the fact that you guys are out there listening. And from John and I, happy holidays to everybody and happy new year. Backstage.